Are you ready for this? Yes, it's your Pod Blast. Let's get going. England, New Zealand draw a blank in the first test. We've got the critic. We Kimber up with Jared Kimber, and boycotts his own inability to speak properly in cricket mumble of the week.
That's not even half of it.
There's so much to get through. This is incredible.
Before any going further, let's take a moment for one of the great legends of the game, Jeff Boycott.
Oh, I love him.
I don't know what Jeff's been doing recently, but he certainly hasn't been talking very much.
No.
Because he's lost the ability to talk.
He's had some time off.
We're going to be focusing on punditry.
Yeah.
But a navel gazing.
Absolutely.
If you will. As pundits, focusing on pundits.
Pundits on pundits. Man on man.
Let's listen to Jeff.
Yep.
He blossomed, he started to move his feet well forward, back, glide nicely, and he looked very comfort level.
I mean, he did look comfort level.
He looked very comfort level.
All right, so that's Jeff on Compton in the TMS podcast.
Forward, back. Did he say light at one point? Forward, back, light, night, people,
man. I couldn't follow what he was doing.
It was word association, and I loved it.
Let's talk about Compton's technique quickly. England have drawn. It's the fourth day.
You've segued. Yeah, come on.
Compton's got a century.
Yeah.
And it's a very fine century. Well done to him. It's always a great thing. And his dad cried in the crowd. That was sweet. Oh. It reminded me of the thing that always makes me cry, which is the Olympics.
Oh, and the Derek Redmond dad.
Don't get me.
Don't think of it, listeners.
Oh. And did he break his leg? Did he literally snap his leg?
He snapped something. I don't think it was bone.
And but that's the Olympics where his dad comes out.
Oh.
When I've had a couple of drinks, which is most of the time, I think about that. And I can't help but well.
Yeah, me too. Which is odd because dads at sports days, one of our first experiences of father-son sport interaction, is generally sort of a boozy and ludicrous affair, isn't it? It's not emotional.
And it's always a bit disappointing because they always join the 100-meter dash and lose to Carl's dad.
Yeah, and they take a really long time to slow down. If they do 100 metres, they do 300.
They really do
just
build up
they
momentum.
They weigh a certain amount at that age. You'll be on this soon. And it takes quite a long time. They should strap parachutes to their backs to sort of make them stop quicker.
Yeah, it's slightly worrying. But the thing about Compton's technique, just pulling it back into the world of cricket, is he's very upright and very still at the crease. Mm. And he covers his off stump.
He does, yeah.
And the left armers, the New Zealanders, moving across him, and it would pitch on middle, moving just past his off stump, and he knew exactly where it was, like all good openers, and he was letting it fly past. Mm. All well and good. But I kept thinking, if you can deceive him by pulling one back into his legs, swing it back in, he's very still. He hasn't moved. He's right over on his off stump. Mm. He's right off balance. He's very tall. And that's exactly what happened in the second innings, how he got out. And I thought, Odell, you've got a real eye for this thing.
You've got a real...
And that is the whole point of the story.
I like the idea. And of course, in the end, I was right. I like the idea of you sitting back there on your own, thinking that, and then going, God, I'm right.
You've got to try to forget that, but you can't, because you know there's always the chance of the ignominy of getting a pair, and everybody's going to remember the spectacles.
You've got to remember the spectacles. Was that Freudian? Because Jeff was reading from an auto cue while having forgotten his spectacles. Was that an in-joke? By the way, I hope Jeff doesn't compile a list of our slip-ups, because I'm being very careful of how I speak at the moment. But my intro wasn't my smoothest.
No, it wasn't your smoothest.
Jeff might come down hard on me on Ask Boikes next week.
He could really come down hard on you.
God, he would. Don't try. I know what you're trying to do there.
He'd bear down on you.
Move on.
Let's talk about some more aggressive, or not sexually aggressive, but nevertheless aggressive behaviour by the England bowlers.
Yes.
Broad and Anderson in particular in the first innings. Mm. Petulance is a word that springs to mind.
Yeah. I always find that Jimmy, he's up to something. And also, Jimmy is like one of those rock and roll stars who you're like, well, he's just like that. That's you couldn't take that part of his game away from him.
Well, that's nonsense, because at the moment, he's a craftsman. Have you come across this news? Everybody, all of the pundits now, Jimmy's a craftsman.
He's like Jimmy Page, who's an artist. Hang on, he's a craftsman, like a carpenter.
Yeah, almost, but like a bowling carpenter. Like, wow. He's done his apprenticeship and now he's mastered his craft.
Karen Carpenter?
He's one of the carpenters.
He's only just begun.
I tell you what, that is one of the worst jokes I've ever heard.
Oh, dear.
They're awful, they're petulant, they're embarrassing. They behave as if they were entitled to be bowling New Zealand out and they couldn't understand why. Mm. And, that's one of the great things about this test match. This test match has got a lot of criticism and I can't understand why. Fantastic. Game of cricket.
Well, it was brilliant. It
so
had
much. Well, a thin 50 at Night Watchman.
Yeah.
And I know we're going to talk about Night Watchman during the course of this episode. Debut hundreds.
Yep.
100 for Rutherford, first 100 for Compton. Yep. Rutherford taking it on the arm. I don't know whether you saw that from Jimmy and standing there like a 70s player, just showing no pain.
Brilliant.
And Broad and Anderson kicking the ball at him. They reminded me of Luis Suarez. You know,
yes.
They were the worst kind of football antics. And afterwards, Jimmy, when asked about it delicately in an interview, said, well, you know, the emotions get
they
the best of you.
High.
They run very high.
Wow.
And just thought, you know, just think of the most aggressive, dangerous fast bowlers, the snarling Dennis Lilly.
Mm.
And then think of just the pathetic petulance of Broad and Anderson that first. It was embarrassing to watch.
You've come down hard on this, haven't
I
you?
I have, because I think it was just an absolute microcosm of the way that England approached the game and how they got found out. And fortunately for England, because they're full of character and they've got some clear heads like Cook at the top, they managed to turn it around.
Yeah.
But that was the narrative of the game for me that made it so interesting. Being bowled out for 156 and then
great
the bowlers
narrative.
Behaving. Yeah, great.
Great narrative. Well, that's absolutely true. I think one of the sort of really interesting things about it was that we did come back after a while, but we'd had all this talk about we're not taking it lightly. If you keep saying we're not taking it lightly, it makes me think that you might be taking it
you're
lightly.
Certainly considering.
You're definitely
taking
considering
it lightly.
Yeah. It's not like it isn't on the menu. It's been suggested and you've gone, well, no, I wouldn't take it lightly.
He thinks, I'll take it lightly.
Yes. Yeah,
I know what you mean. But it was the other criticism that came out in the game is the groundsman. Over and over again, Atherton on the final day was,
Michael Atherton, who I thought had committed a murder this week, and it turned out it was another Michael Atherton. Do you remember that?
I didn't think Michael Atherton had committed a murder because he was in New Zealand.
Yes, but you never know. That's always a very convenient alibi. And also, we were a little critical of him a while ago. So if he goes postal, I am taking, evasive action inside our secret South London hideout.
If I was the groundsman in that game, I would be going postal on Atherton at the moment because that's the groundsman's livelihood.
Mm.
And Atherton's standing there and he begins a stampede because it's always everybody in the press box ends up saying exactly the same thing, Debel accepted.
Mm.
And they're all saying this pitch is completely unsatisfactory. Well, that's absolute nonsense. It was a four-day game, all right? Mm. A lot of wickets fell, including one team being bowled out for 156.
Mm.
England's achievement was outstanding to bat for the amount of time that they batted.
Mm.
And even towards the end of that fourth day, which is effectively the fifth day, New Zealand thought they had a sniff when Root got run out.
Exactly.
So actually, no, that wasn't a bad pitch at all. If you want a bad pitch, you don't have to look very far because today Bangladesh are playing Sri Lanka in Gaul at the moment. Bangladesh, 438 for 4 at the end of day 3.
Yes, God.
In reply
to
Sri Lanka's 570 for 4. That's a flat pitch.
That's a flat pitch.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're right. I think it's very unfair. And if that game had gone 5 days, we probably would have expected a result about an hour before closing time. And that's pretty much the perfect pitch.
I know they made up a little bit of time during, but nothing makes up for a day's deterioration of the pitch by playing on it. If they'd started 10 o'clock on the morning on day one, I think there would have been a result. I don't think for one second that you have to have a result in every test match game. Otherwise, everyone's going to start watching 2020. Mm. What was wrong with this test? It had incredible back-to-the-wall innings.
Yeah, yeah.
The Finn innings, I say it again, was just... I mean,
it's brilliant.
Entertaining.
It's I love a draw. Because
a good draw.
Cricket is, well, a good draw, absolutely, not a ball draw. But it's like war cricket. There's a lot of rhymes in there, I'm sure. But that's what I love about cricket. You can never quite explain it to people. But it's like a battle. And you have to really push back those troops. You have to bring out your best big guns. You have to sometimes take that little knife that sits on the front of your rifle and have a go at them like that by hand in a kind of bloody hand-to-hand combat scenario, a bit like that bit where the German puts the knife through the American's chest in Saving Private Ryan.
It is a bit like that, but all in the bucolic surroundings of Dunedin in New Zealand. We've criticised New Zealand as a touring venue. Robert Croft on Twitter this week said it was the best place to tour, and it didn't half look beautiful, I've got to say.
Good on him, Crofty. He would be very at home there, though, looking a little bit like a cross between Mr. Tumnus and an extra from Lord of the Rings.
Not just the only one that looks like Lord of the Rings. Have you seen the New Zealand left armour? Is it Bolt or Wagner? I think it's Bolt. Looks just like Stuart Downey.
Is it Bolt or Wagner?
But there's also something of the elf about him.
Something of the elf.
He was bowling well. Oh, he bowled well.
He was very good, and I love a good left armour. And yeah, we haven't had a good one since Alan Mullally.
No, we haven't, and he wasn't very good. The thing about left armours that England needs to be very concerned about as well is that there's a very, very good left armour coming to England this summer, which is Mitchell Starc.
Yes.
And Compton, in particular, is going to have to work out what he's going to do about somebody who can swing it at pace back into his pads.
Yes. I'm not sure what he's going to do. He might have to come up with a new plan, but listen, this is early on. We're saying, so he has no excuses. Nick, he's going to swing it back into your pads. What are you going to do about it? The ball's in your court now. Nothing more we can do about it.
No.
But Nick, if you're listening, think about it. We're going to talk about Night Watchmen in a segment called The Watchmen.
That bit where you just breathed into the microphone reminds me of the only thing that I don't like about the Guardian Football podcast,
which
is the one they do on Friday, Guardian Football Extra.
Yeah.
And James Richardson does this great intro full of puns, all very dense, and then he gets in and he goes, extra! Why
do you hate that bit?
Oh, it makes my toes curl.
Really?
I can't bear it. Let's talk about Night Watchmen.
Let's get over that.
Finn, obviously outstanding.
Fantastic.
But you're going to tell us maybe a little bit of history about you, because you're a mystery most of the time. You're an enigma.
I am very much cricket's enigma. Not my words, the words of you sitting next to me, Alex O'Dell. But listen, I was there when Alex Tudor scored his famous 99 and Graham Thorpe didn't let him get to his 100. That was one of the great Night Watchman performances. But, I mean, I also thought Finn deserves a lot of credit. He played and missed a couple of times, but to be honest, the man nearly faced 32 overs on his own. And that's an incredible effort where we were really trying to bat the game out. There was going to be no chance of anything more than putting them in for a few overs to get a couple of wickets.
Finn did really well through the slip cord and around third slip. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just Finn. The entire game, Rutherford's a big century, Compton as well. There were a lot of runs for a supposedly flat pitch. A lot of runs scored through an empty third slip.
Yeah.
And the other thing I can't understand, and I mentioned it on Twitter and I didn't get a proper response in that nobody responded at all.
So that's not proper.
Why was there no third man? I tell a lie, in fact, a couple of people did respond. There was a certain amount of support. Why is there no third man if so many runs are going through there?
Yeah.
I don't understand it, because if you put a third man in, the guy knows he can't score off those.
Yeah.
So maybe he's going to try and drive a bit more, try and play a bit more in front, and you'll get a few more nicks. Does that work? All I know is a lot of runs through that area.
Well, and also particularly when you've got a guy who's probably going to be nicking off a lot towards that area.
Yeah,
that's probably going to be one of the main areas, particularly as in modern cricket, but you're going to get a night watchman out.
You know what one of the most bizarre things about these fast bowlers getting pissed off is?
Yeah.
The batsman, Rutherford in particular, was doing this. He was playing forward.
Yeah.
He was doing a soft nick.
Yeah.
And it was flying through third man. And Broad and Anderson would be furious. You know,
yeah.
They'd stomp, they'd mouth off, they'd do whatever.
That's
You're
so
the
annoying.
Bowler.
Yeah, you do
tell
about
your captain
it.
To
Don't
put
get
a third man
with him.
In.
He doesn't try to do it.
The field for himself. It's insane.
It is. Hamish Rutherford, very, very well played. And we'll touch briefly on him again. I love to touch on him, as I just said.
Night Watchman,
by the way. I like it, the fact that they're sort of like special teams players. There's a frisson of something whenever the Night Watchman's in, I think. And it's how long can he last? And why is he there? Because we've never really had a good explanation other than it's like sending in a stooge, isn't it? It's like, you know, if you were in some sort of comedy crime caper, you might send in an idiot who's not the master criminal, but he looks a bit like him, and he might get arrested, and then the cat burglar would go, no, it's me. He's just a stooge who looks a bit like a batsman, a good batsman, but he's not one.
I like the brutality of it. Can you imagine a bunch of guys, they're trying to take a Hamburger Hill in Vietnam, circle or whatever, and someone goes, well, someone's got to take out the machine post.
Yeah.
And everyone looks at each other, pick Fat Billy.
Yeah, Fat Billy.
Billy,
I think you can do it, mate.
If one of us die, it'll matter.
That matters, but you, Billy. this is what you were born to do, Billy.
And you might survive.
But most other people in special teams are special teams because they're particularly good. Watchman is because they're particularly bad. Is there any other form of sport when that happens? I'd love to know.
If you want to get into the real details of Night Watchman, I can recommend this new thing that's out, that's been advertised, which is Wisden are doing a quarterly sort of news magazine with very long pieces. And one of the first ones coming out is on Night Watchman. And it's definitely worth a read.
I love a long piece.
So that's Night Watchman.
We'll refer you to that. We won't go on about it. Suffice to say, well played,
if you want
played,
to read up
sir,
more.
If you want further reading, this is a bit...
It's a little bit like being at university and being
this
given a
lovely.
Reading list.
And don't... Honestly, this kind of knowledge, these are the best years of your life, listener. Don't throw it away. Do the reading. Attend all the lectures. Get your coursework in on time. And we might give you a good mark.
That's cricket music.
That was cricket music for you. That's what it is. If anyone's looking for a big gag or a big laugh before that jingle, I'm sorry I wasn't able to provide that.
That's all right,
Rob. I was searching for one. But
let's go back to content and let's get cricket specific.
Ooh.
And in particular, let's critique the cricket critic.
Critique the cricket critic.
I like Ed Smith on TMS. I think he's excellent.
Sure.
I think the fact that Test Match Sofa exists means that there's a market for it. I don't think that the TMS market is eaten into particularly by Test Match Sofa. I think the Sky cricket market is. I think Sky should be very, very concerned by the amount of people who are watching it on TV and listening to TMS or Test Match Sofa if they can. And it's because, effectively, a lot of their punditry is just awful.
They're all drunk, aren't they? They all sound kind of hungover. And really sad, like that bit in the day where you go, you woke up and you feel you've got a headache, but then you're just annoyed at the world. And there's a bit where you'll feel really sort of giddy, but they haven't got there yet. And nowhere near
it's an easy target, it's a punching bag. But Bob Willis yesterday, there was a slow shot over the stands at the ground, and there was complete silence, radio silence, and this is it. He goes, variety of seating being used.
That was what was said.
Brilliant. As it crowed out, and it wasn't even very much variety
it's
at all.
Like I once met Prince Edward, and he came to see a player was in a production, and he said, very well done. You've got big coats on. Who has the heaviest costume? And someone put their hand up, and he went, good. And the lightest? And then someone else put their hand up, and he went, I imagine there are a lot of parties, a lot of youngsters in London. Who lives the closest? And everyone went, I suppose he does. And there was and the furthest away? And I thought, this is all you do, Prince Edward. You don't do anything else. Similarly, Bob, this is all you do.
You know, I think you've got to run through the checklist. The thing is about Bob is it's like having an old shy horse and you don't want to shoot him in the head and boil him down for glue. But, you know, are you being insightful?
Yeah.
No. Are you being interesting? No. Are you being funny? No. Are you being poetic? No.
He's there.
What are you doing?
He's a reminder. He's a warning for other critics of what they might become. It's like a scarecrow. We do love Bob Willis, for God's sake.
But the thing is, people love him because he's so awful. And I think there's a lot of good people out there. And I'm not talking about us.
God knows.
This is not a pitch for TMS or Sky Sports. But, you know, there are people out there, DeBell, and they should be allowed a bigger audience. So
that's true.
It's shocking, and Sky Sports needs to do something about it.
Now, a little segment on the Australian wild man, Jared Kimber.
Because there's different kinds of drinking. If you're still drunk the next morning, you've probably gone too far.
Well, this is a segment by the Switch Hit, which is obviously one of our favourite podcasts, with Jared Kimber, who we like a lot. We think it's very interesting.
Yeah.
And he is talking about the British Lions down in Australia, who did really badly. And I think one of the pundits in that show compared it to one of the 1990s tour, where they just keep losing and drinking.
Yeah.
And Stokes eventually got sent home. And Kimber's actually saying, you know,
it's like a checklist for people who don't know when they've gone too far.
Yeah.
That's what I quite like about what he was doing there.
That's what he kicked off with. This was the next one he dropped in.
If you miss a team meeting because you're paralytic in a car park, you've probably gone too far.
There was a little bit of a disclaimer on that one. You've probably gone too far. So maybe not as bad as the first one, but chances are you have gone too far.
They do youth education where they go around and tell people and warn people about, you know, behaving properly. I think Jared should
That's all you need. You need those two sound bites and then people can judge their actions based on those two.
If you find yourself on Strictly Come Dancing and you get a drill and you drill a hole in the ice, put your semi-erect penis into it, spin yourself around using your penis as an axis, shouting, "Mummy, mummy, I love you, I love you."
You've gone too far.
You've probably gone too far. Yeah.
If you're out in the supermarket and you get completely undressed and you get some frozen peas and then rub them all over your body, all these involve nudity, don't they? And then you start singing the not as well-known hits of Lana Del Rey, then you've probably gone too far.
Probably. But Ben Stokes, let's just, you know, take a moment. Think about it.
If you're resorting to throwing in electric stingers into your cricket pod blast halfway through to create the mirage of excitement, you probably haven't gone far enough with your banter.
We're going to have to go a long way back in time for this next topic, and I apologise for that, but somebody selfish went away for a while, Ross. Anyway, Trot and One Day is the old debate.
The Trots.
DeBell did a very heated, stats-based defence of Trot, and he was...
It was very much
opinion,
like
absolutely right.
He was right. It was like the Matthew McConaughey at the end of A Time to Kill. I shed a tear.
Do you know what's funny about that? It's every single time they refer to it in the show now that I don't worry, DeBell's not going to go off again, or don't worry, no more stats. And I actually thought that was a bit of the show where I thought it was
the best bit,
maybe the best bit I'd ever listened
to. Really,
it was sort of passionate. It was well informed. It was well researched. And it completely persuaded me. And I thought, that was brilliant. But they keep referring to it as if somebody's just taken a turd and just put it on someone else's doorstep.
In which case, you would have gone too far. But I like the Matthew McConaughey bit. It ends, "And now imagine she was white." Imagine if Jules de Bell had gone. And that's why he's got great
now
average.
Now imagine Trot is English.
And now imagine he was English.
Anyway, I just want to delve into the Trot stats for the naysayers just for a moment. Just to talk about why I think they weren't completely off their nut when they suggested that Trot's place was under threat. Only so far as this. First of all, he's very boring to watch. All right. And so people don't like watching him.
That is debatable.
And this is what triggers it, though, in my mind. I think that's where the hostility comes from. In the 2nd of October 2011 is the new rule in ODI that you have two new balls from the beginning. And DeBell was using that as a cutoff, so we're going to use it as a cutoff as well. Now, since that, even though he's got a great technique and you think he'd do well against the new ball, his strike rate has dropped from 75 to 70 over the course of his career, and his average has dropped very slightly as well. Well, you know, most batsmen have probably done the same. All right. DeBell is saying he's in a strong position because of the New Zealand one-day tour.
Yeah.
Trot's strike rate is over 80 during the course of that tour. He has 86, 89, 75 strike rate.
Yes.
All right, so DeBell, you know, he's doing fine. Plus, you know, Root, as of today, hasn't done well in the test match, so maybe well. But in 13 innings before that, 13 innings, and we're talking about completed innings he's batted, Trot didn't have a strike rate over 80. In fact, we're talking about four series here: South Africa, Australia, West Indies, and Pakistan. Of which only the Pakistan series was abroad in the UAE. And bear that in mind when you're thinking about the Champions Trophy being in the UK.
Sure, big argument.
His strike rate is 62.
That's not good.
And his average is down to 41.
41's still quite a good average.
So what I'm saying is, well, he bats at three.
Yeah, 41's good though for anyone in what ODI cricket.
I think if you're averaging 41 and your strike rate is 62. And by the way, his average is 41 because he's got two not outs in there.
Yeah.
All right. Think about a team that bats at a 62 strike rate. By my calculation, they make 184 runs an innings.
Yeah.
That puts a burden on the other players, to my mind.
Well, this is a real chicken and the egg one, because I think he bats that way to set it up for the other players, so then they don't have to bat slowly. They can throw the bat at it. And that's the other argument.
Other argument. I know what you mean. But I look at the strike rates, you know, Cook has got an almost entirely consistent strike rate over his career and over the same series as Trot of around 78. And Bell's doing well too. I would notice South Africa, Pakistan today, South Africa scored over 300. So maybe a slightly unusual game to pick up on. But again, three of their top four strike rates of 100. I mean, that to my mind is really critical.
That's what one's
stuff.
Got to aim for. Yeah. Well, that's interesting stuff. Having said that, I would like to throw a little penny in the water, if that means anything, that I think he's starting to speed up. Do you think he's consciously? I'm pretty sure he has the fastest strike rate in the first and second innings of any batsman in that game.
Are you talking about the Test match?
In the Test match.
He did come in and start knocking around straight away.
So is this a new tactic from Trotty? And if it is, has he been unduly affected by such comments? Wow, that was like a shot of adrenaline to the nutsack.
What's the actual answer? Has he been affected? Is he reading the press? No.
I think he might. I would say we'll find out. Time will tell if we see any changes in his style. But it wouldn't surprise me a little if he's starting to try and, maybe because of advice or hearsay, just pick up his strike rate a little bit. But I would say, Johnny, don't go changing.
I think he's going to score a lot of runs against New Zealand in the next two tests because he is very, very good off his legs and he's facing two left-arm seamers.
That's true.
So he's going to get the opportunity to do it. Mm. All right, we always like to try and keep our finger on the pulse.
We try.
And we also, using another bizarre sort of metaphor, also like to scan the horizon for new issues.
Both. We do both at once. Like someone checking that a half-dead man is okay, but aware that there are wolves around.
Okay, so we're looking at Pakistani cricket, and in particular, we commented last time that we thought that if they added Jonathan Trott or Alistair Cook to their lineup, they'd be doing very well. Mm. Got in touch with some followers on Twitter.
Oh, really? The Pakistani board.
I didn't get in touch with them directly this time, although that does remind me to speak about Canaria. And I asked who's the next up-and-coming guy in Pakistani cricket that we need to look out for. The answer, listeners, Haris Sahail.
Look out! Incoming!
First thing to mention,
strong pair of eyebrows.
He's got a really good strong pair of eyebrows.
We like that on a Pakistan batsman.
He averages 52 in first-class cricket, and that's from 80 innings. He's got a high score of 211 not out. He's hit 11 centuries. This guy knows how to bat time, I tell you that. He plays for Sialkot and Sialkot Stallions, and he also plays for the Zarai Tarakiati Bank.
Wow. Yeah, I know them very well. Two of my favourite teams in the Punjab.
And he is a left-handed middle-order batsman. So you heard it here first. If you're a fan of Pakistani cricket and you're wondering who the guy to look out for is, we've been told on good authority it's Haris Sahail, and he's 24 years old. Jamshed, move over. There's a new hairy eyebrowed kid on the block.
Jamshed is away, so hail the new leader. Well, we had a question in about USA cricket. And that was from our 500th follower. And they wanted to know, what was the chap's name?
Oh, John Lister. Yeah, John Lister. He's a Premier League cricket player in South Africa for Zingari CC, leg break bowler. He came in with an interesting question for the Pod Blast.
Johnny, hey.
And his question was, T20 cricket going nationwide in the USA. Cricket.
Yeah.
We criticise boycott and I call it cricket.
See, they criticise me. They can't even speak, those lot.
Your views on 20 cricket in America. Let me tell you, I've gone to a lot of baseball in America.
He has. You've hit right in the arc of our night watchman, Alex O'Dell.
They are going to put up pretty stiff competition, I can tell you that. But in an effort to promote it, which is part of the plan, New Zealand and the West Indies played two games in Florida in July, June the 30th and July the 1st, both down in Florida, where apparently there are big Caribbean communities that would come along. West Indies won both games, both very high-scoring games, on supposedly very flat pitches. That's something that's going to have to be dealt with. Mm. I can say personally that there has got to be a market because there are big cricket leagues up and down the East Coast, Philadelphia, New York, Baltimore, with a lot of guys who are maybe Indian, Pakistani origin. They're not getting what they need. Yes, America could be fantastic. We're really looking for it. It's going to be great.
I like when you said, we're really looking for it. It's going to go off. Is that what you said about American cricket?
I don't even know what I said.
That's going to be mine. He's saying, we're really looking for it. It's really going off. How are you? I'm really looking for it. It's really
going
to go off.
It's going off.
What you wanted to talk about pitch vision, finally.
I did. Just a quick recommendation for all you multi-blasters out there.
The multi-blasters.
Get hold of the Pitch Vision podcast. They're really technical. They go into all the aspects of the game, done by cricket coaches, and they are so interesting, so helpful. If you want to get into minutiae, if you're the kind of guy who owns the Bob Wilmer book on cricket,
the Art of Cricket Bible. Oh, the cricket. Is it called The Art of Cricket?
It is.
Oh.
Then tune in for the Pitch Vision.
Written by the Moses of cricket, Bob Wilmer. Ah, well, what a week it's been. What a show that's been.
Yeah, well, a lot to talk about because it was so long since we last spoke.
Yeah, God, sorry about that. I had some stuff on.
Something other than the Pod Blast.
I do have a life, you know, listeners. It's not just, this isn't it for me. This isn't where I begin and end. I've got other stuff on.
Come on, do it for the money. Sing, Ross, sing.
Well, I'll see you next week. And you can tweet us in things at a tweet address.
At Cricket Pod Blast.
At Cricket Pod Blast. You know I love you. I won't be away for so long next time.
Tweet us.